Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg, let's get to Mac Jones, who we are likely to see Sunday in New Orleans. And I guess start with sort of more of an umbrella question about his play over the last 4 years. What have you seen as his strengths and weaknesses?
Well, I think in many ways he's stylistically similar to Purdy, other than the fact that he's not as good an athlete as Purdy.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Same guy, just not as good.
Yeah, stylistically, and I loved his breakdown. And he's right. Yeah. He's, you know, a guy who can thrive in the system, and he's going to make the correct throws based on what's schemed and what's called. The one thing that he said, and you said it before, it's about the escapability. If things do break down, is he going to have that same Brock ability to wiggle out and run for nine or throw one up for Tonjes?
So,
maybe not.
Yeah, like, let's get into this, everyone. 888-957-9570. Brock Purdy is very unlikely to play this weekend in New Orleans. Kyle Shanahan called it a long shot.
Any further sense about whether Brock will be able to play on Sunday?
I think it's a long shot.
Is it possible that Purdy's injury could be a multi-week thing?
It's possible.
And that's the toe more so than the shoulder.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the toe. It's a long shot for this weekend, and it could be a multi-week injury. So Mac Jones, very, very likely to be in. We know George Kittle's on IR. Juwan Jennings did not practice today, but that one is still considered kind of day-to-day. And then Trent Williams and Nick Bosa and Christian McCaffrey all got vet days and skipped practice today. The one that really kind of hit me or will stick with me if I'm trying to create hope in my mind for the 49ers with however long Mac Jones is in there, or if he has to come in again later in the year or whatever, is sort of toward the end when we ask Greg, like, has Mac ever really had what he needs around him? And he was like, no.
No.
He expanded, but that the first thing he said was no. Like, has Mac ever really had stability, the right coaching, the right whatever, whether it's offensive line, receivers? I know everyone gets so flippin' triggered and freaked out about product of system. But we all know, I think we're starting to get more comfortable with the idea that to some degree, they're all a product of the system.
Yeah, almost all of them,
I'd say.
And then
to some degree, every system is a product of them. Like, yes, you need a good quarterback, but nobody is good if everything's crumbling around you. And I kind of think it's almost become what the Niners do. They're like, let's get a quarterback, and then let's back him up with somebody who we think is undervalued because they've never been in a good system.
Yeah.
And quarterbacks are learning that this is where you go rehabilitate your career. It's certainly what Sam Darnold did a couple of years ago.
And he actually not only rehabilitated his career, but he learned a lot. And when he went to Minnesota, he had a great year because he got some confidence. He got some knowledge. You have a great year, then you go out and you get that bag. And so if you're Mac last offseason, you're thinking, I want to follow the Darnold plan. And you get $5 million guaranteed in a two-year deal. Maybe he's only here for 1 year. And right away, this Sunday, it looks like he's going to get a start and a chance to show what he can do with his stability. And thinking about Jacksonville last year, your running backs were Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby, professional football players, but it's not McCaffrey. And you had one good receiver and you didn't have much else. Your coach was on the way to getting fired. You went 4-13 and the thing was kind of a broken mess.
I mean, I think that, Jacksonville and the Patriots before them, there are players. There are players around them. But to me, it's even more a function of coaching. The Jacksonville coaching staff has been in ruins for a number of years, and that's why it got rebooted again this year. And New England was, Matt gets picked at the end of the Belichick run, and then there's this confusion over what, remember this, like they didn't even have an offensive coordinator, McDaniels leaves and you have Belichick, who's a defensive guy, And then I'm going to blank out on the assistant coach with the beard. Who's the guy that had the big beard that was the defensive coordinator?
Patricia?
Yes.
The pencil?
No, yeah, and then they used him as the offensive coordinator, but he's not an offensive coordinator. And so Mac's getting worse every year of his career. And they were just kind of all over the place. And so I don't know the inner workings of what they were doing, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't as high level as this. Like, you didn't have Christian McCaffrey behind you, Kyle Shanahan calling plays, and Trent Williams as your left tackle. I'm pretty sure that Mac Jones has never functioned in an environment like that. So that doesn't mean he's going to be great this weekend, but it does mean what all athletes want, he now has, and that is be in your best position to succeed. And I think that this game this Sunday is probably his best position to succeed. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, and probably going back to his rookie year where he had Josh McDaniels was the OC, and they went 10-7. Buffalo hammered him in the wild card game, 47-17. But if you look at that team, he had some real legitimate professional weapons around him, and the greatest football coach in the history of the NFL, not quite fully checked out yet, but the rosters he had year over year after that, they got progressively worse, and then Jacksonville is even worse than that. So for Mac Jones, it's kind of a clean slate. Ideally, this would be happening in week 7 maybe, or week 8, where he had even more time to ramp up to it, but he got a good amount of reps in the preseason, so all right, kid, go show us what you got.
Kind of a fun text from the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line from the 650. The last time Mac had good things around him, Alabama. And that went very, very well. Now, that does not mean anything in terms of translating to the NFL, but I will never know what to believe, but on some level, we are led to believe that Kyle Shanahan had eyes for Mac Jones based on what he saw him do the last time he had good things going on around him, which was at Alabama.
Yes, and it's interesting because stylistically, as Greg Cosell just mentioned, he matches up with Brock Purdy very well, yet Trey Lance doesn't match up with what Brock Purdy does. And so in that moment, in that draft, they chose to go the other way. Then you find Brock Purdy with the last pick in the draft, yeah. And you know, Mac Jones becomes available years later. It's like, yeah, Brock is a better version of the guy I was crushing on in that draft. So, of course, we'll take him as our backup. And I do think the transition from Brock to Mac this Sunday, assuming it happens, and Kyle said it's a long shot, I'm pretty much expecting that it will happen. But I don't think the transition will be as abrupt as going from, you know, Purdy to Trey Lance, for example.
No.
Like Josh Dobbs, you know, quarterbacks who stylistically are different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, quick aside, this is another reason, and you know this, whenever we do, I don't even like anymore when people before the year goes, what's your Super Bowl prediction? I'm like, what the hell's about? I have no idea what January is going to look like. The best part about the NFL season is that every Monday, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new world. We had a summit 6 days ago, okay? 6 days ago, we held a summit that was solely based on this 49ers season. What are the things that we talked about? We worried about Christian McCaffrey's injury. Turns out he doesn't have one. We worried about the 49er kicker. He's not the 49er kicker anymore. We talked about what Brock Purdy needed to do this season. Brock Purdy's not playing this weekend and possibly next weekend. But who's the most important non-Brock Purdy 49er on offense? Well, some would say maybe George Kittle. He's not playing for the entire month of September. The whole thing is different.
Totally.
6 days later, and everything on offense that we thought we knew is largely now different for the 49ers this weekend.
Right. The tight end is out. The quarterback is probably out. And the wide receiver, too, who finally was in, he might be out. The other wide receiver is amazing. Jake Tonjes actually gets the ball thrown to him.
Well,
so you're right. So many
kicker,
things are...
New kicker.
New kicker. And defensively, everything, knock on wood. I mean, Yetur Gross-Matos, he probably will be able to go. I know he was out today with a knee. But defensively, you're kind of intact. And you know what? It's okay. It's not an indictment on Brock Purdy or Kyle Shanahan if you have to win games 20-19 this year. That to me is okay. People are going to look at Brock, like if Seattle happens more regularly, two interceptions and a lower point total, if that happens a lot, fans are going to freak out that we're overpaying Brock Purdy. I personally don't see it that way. You just coach and you play to win the game.
No, I don't mind any win. I don't mind any win. I do think that if, like, it depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about right now, I totally agree with you. There is a bigger picture, though. Like, if the 49ers do go win the NFC West, it's like, all right, well, where are you going? You know, you watch that Sunday night football game. You think anybody's beaten those two teams if you're grinding out things 20-19? Probably not. Like, there's a lot of firepower out there.
Yep.
And so if you're going to beat that, and the weird thing about the Niners is they'll never face it. They will not face it this year until the playoffs. So they could be a grinder team and do 21-17 all year long, 17-14 all year long. They could win a division, and then they could get into the playoffs and get totally outclassed because a Green Bay or a Washington or a Detroit is waiting for them, or if they were to be fortunate enough to get into the Super Bowl, a Baltimore or a Buffalo or something like that could be waiting for them. And I don't know that we're ever going to know if the Niners, this edition of the Niners, is able to compete on that level. I don't know.
Yeah, just depends on two things. One is obviously health. And if you don't have your quarterback all year, it's going to be difficult. I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but health is first and foremost. And the second one for me, and this will be an ongoing thread that I'm going to watch throughout the course of the season, is this defense real? And we mentioned it before, the list of quarterbacks who you're facing are mostly tier three and tier four guys. You're not facing a lot of high-powered offenses in the regular year. So the defense might look better than it actually is. You know what I'm saying? Facing weaker offenses,
we might overestimate
this defense until, you know, you go up against one of these teams that has multiple weapons.
I mean, I kind of buy what Steiny was saying in the crossover. There is a scenario where the game that they just won on, like, is one of the hardest games that they will have all year. From a matchup standpoint, from the standpoint of the things that maybe we're not necessarily thinking about, the fact that not that you're just on the road at Seattle, but you're on the road at Seattle week one. Like, that was where you got to test out all your stuff. We got rookies playing. We got to have timing. We got to have chemistry. You've got to hear me. You've got to know where you're going. And we're doing it on the road at Seattle. It's one of the hardest places to do it. Whether the fans are rooting for you or them or whatever, doesn't matter. And they were able to figure it out. It didn't look great, but they were able to figure that out. And now you're dealing with a different set of challenges because key players are out, but if those guys are able to get back sometime soon, I don't know how many environments, like even you brought up the next two toughest games at the Rams and at Tampa, those aren't scary environments.
No.
I mean, the Rams is going to be a home game.
And Sunday, honestly, was less scary than it used to be. You could hear the Niner crowd throughout the whole game.
For sure.
Might not have been 50-50, but that was not nearly as difficult as it has been in the past. But yeah, environment-wise, you're not going to have too many other tough ones. And I know this Sunday, if you do go with Mac Jones, it's going to be a lot more difficult knowing that he's making his first start as a Niner.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station in the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Yeah, you got to bake all of that into your ziti. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's a bunch of stuff that was happening in that game that we didn't know. Like, we knew that George Kittle was out. And then we found out that Juwan was out. Now we found out that Brock was running around on a toe injury and a shoulder injury. There's all kinds of things going on in that football game that we did not know about. And I'll add in another, which is sort of philosophical. I don't know what conversation happened on the sideline, but I bet there was something to the effect of, hey, dude, we're scoring touchdowns the rest of the way. And if not, we're going for it on fourth down. So if we're late in the game and we're losing, yeah, dude, huck it up. We're not getting into a kicker battle. He's fired. Don't worry about him. He doesn't even play for us anymore. We'll send him out there for extra points and kickoffs. Other than that, we're done. We're done. I don't think anything like that exactly happened, but there was something. There was something to me that was suggested, which was let's avoid field goals if at all possible.
Right, and that's what they did, their approach. So the kick gets blocked, and it's a 36-yarder, and you could see Kyle open mouth say a word that even John Feliciano, a friend of the program, hasn't uttered. It starts with a F and rhymes with duck. And he screamed it as loud as humanly possible. And so from then on, yeah, I'm with you. The next drive, it's 4th and 2 at the 14. They pick it up because they don't want to kick a field goal. But then 4th and 13, 4th and goal from the 13. Heck.
Right.
Now what?
Now
you're not going to go for that. He kicked it. He made it. And the game was tied. But I'm kind of with you when you get down all the way to the nitty-gritty. And I wonder if it was 4th and goal from the 4. If Tonjes doesn't make that catch, we'll never know what they would have done. Field goal ties it. Awful tempting, even though you can't wait to cut your kicker. It's a chippy. He couldn't miss 2 of those, could he, Mark?
God, I hope not.
I mean, luckily we didn't have to get to that point.
No, but you're like, I watched it in a completely different way once you got to the 4th quarter. Yes, the game was still in the balance and you could win it, but don't you get to a point where you're like, this is so ridiculous that, like, I'm not going to watch this anymore with a, like, please make it, please make it. It's more just like, oh, hell, let's see what happens here. You going to hook this one too? Like, you sort of, it's not give up, but it's just a change in perspective to where I'm like, I don't, what the hell is everybody supposed to do? The kicker doesn't kick the ball straight. So
the feeling of dread. And, you right. know, McCaffrey gets 1 on that first play. The clock's running. And we're not thinking about the field goal line that they put on the screen. You know, ooh, the field goal line. If you can get to the 38, that's Moody's range.
God.
The idea of Moody's range was not crossing my mind at all. I was thinking they're going to lose this game like they lost all these games last year, where this time it's the kicker and the kicking team and, you know, the interception, the 2nd one from Brock. It's like, come on, Brock. That's not the time for that,
no,
kid.
I know. You want, like, actually, what we got to experience last week is what we never got to experience at all last year, which was, ooh, I think we kind of got away with one. Like, that never happened. We gave that feeling to a lot of other fans. That happened, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times where the other team won the football game, and they were like, you shouldn't have won that game. So now the Niners got one.
Yeah. The only one was Tampa last year.
Oh,
they tried to give that thing away about 7 different times.
Sure, and then they didn't.
Right.
Like, I mean, I won't say that the Seahawks, quote, should have won this game because they got outplayed. But when you start sprinkling in all of the other pieces of what took place on Sunday, I do think the Niners kind of got away with one. And thank goodness, because now they might be playing the next game or two without their quarterback. And for me, that changes everything. It changes the way I assess. It changes what I hope for, what I expect. Although, I don't know, man, if I'm listening to everybody, maybe I shouldn't. The Niners are still favored. It's always fascinating to me how many people in our city and in our fan base and all.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All of those things. And I get it. It's frustration and it might be a small percentage of the audience or whatever, but there's so much sort of like, there's a lot of frustration and lack of trust sometimes that gets directed at Kyle Shanahan. But it's so fascinating to me then when this happens. And I really think it pins people in a corner. It's like, if you think Kyle Shanahan's so overrated and he doesn't know the rules and he's too conservative.
Always. Bad clock management.
And damn it, stop calling him a genius. If that's how you feel, why the hell do you think they're going to win this week? They don't have their quarterback.
And New Orleans is not very good. But that would be an easy counterpoint to that.
If they were home against Arizona this weekend, would they still be favored?
Maybe by a point. It'd be close. That'd be a close one. That would be a tight one, I do believe. And hopefully we won't have to see this going forward, because it's home to Arizona next Sunday. And if you still don't have Brock, you won't have George. We don't know about Jawan. And you get to that spot. If Arizona's 2-0 and so are you, that might be a pick 'em, because you know Arizona, they've got a pretty decent little offense there. I mean, the quarterback has given you problems.
I thought the Saints weren't any good.
You had no answer for James Conner.
Yeah, I thought New Orleans wasn't any good.
Trey McBride is a very good tight end.
I thought New Orleans wasn't any good.
They're not.
Okay, so what did Arizona do that was impressive?
They won.
Okay.
They won the game.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
that counts.
It does. It does. Yeah, I don't think they're terrible.
I don't think the 49ers were very impressive. There was aspects that
were. I don't either.
Pearsall was impressive. And Nick Bosa was impressive. Fred Warner, my goodness, Greg Cosell's got a crush on that man.
A lot of people do.
Yeah, hard not to.
Who was impressive for Arizona?
Oh, I haven't seen the whole game. I got to look at the tape, Mark.
I saw a 95-yard touchdown from Marvin Harrison that Kyler Murray threw right over his head.
Yeah.
Threw it right over his head. Murray threw for a 163, had a couple touchdowns, no picks. James Conner, 3.3 yards a carry. Trey Benson broke a 52-yarder, which allowed him to average 8.6 yards per carry. But all in all, 52 of his 69 yards came on one run. Harrison, 5 catches, 71 yards. Okay, Trey McBride, yep, he did this. I mean, okay. They're all right.
Don't have to worry about them for another 10 days. So yeah, not even thinking about Arizona, although the picks are in today for the week, and I like Arizona given the 6.5. That's a late game on Sunday, I think.
Who the hell are they playing?
That's a check the sheet. I just wrote down the team
I
took.
Minus 6.5, but we don't even know against who. Arizona Cardinals this weekend will be. Oh, they're hosting the Panthers. They're hosting the Panthers.
Man, quarterbacks. Yeah, Bryce Young. All right, you can ride with Bryce. I'm 5-0, so all your little noises
and
all your clapping with you and your little buddies back there, y'all need to just check yourselves. It's Ride the Dibber now.
It is.
The bit's got a new name.
For the moment. That's temporary.
I mean,
we didn't pull
out. I got to lose a few in a row before I get the rug pulled out.
I don't know if you get to make that rule.
I don't care about it. You call it whatever you want. Yeah, I'm hot.
You call it whatever you are. You are. You are.
I ain't changing the open, though. That's too much.
No. Who feared the Dibber? I like what you've done with it. You've done a lot of good things there.
You could just do it live.
I could. The texter earlier said Mac Jones and the best talent he's ever played with was at Alabama.
At Bama.
Just glanced at it. Brian Robinson Jr.
Yep.
So it'll be
teammate.
A reunion.
Teammate.
Devontae Smith.
Sure.
117 catches that year.
Right. And who was the other receiver?
A guy named Jalen Waddle.
Jalen Waddle.
Najee Harris. he had 1,466 yards in 13 games. Yep. Bryce Young, the backup quarterback, aforementioned Bryce Young. Yep. And it goes on and on. I mean, bananas. He threw for almost 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns, 4 picks.
My favorite part is when somebody with an Alabama, like a Southern accent, will be like, you can't prove that we're paying our players. Yeah, we can. I was talking to somebody about this last week. I was at a game, this is 1,000 years ago, at the Rose Bowl, college football, probably BCS days, BCS National Championship game, Miami versus Nebraska. I think Miami had Ken Dorsey as their quarterback, whatever.
Miramani.
Yeah. Wide receivers, Andre Johnson, Santana Moss. Running backs, Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Frank Gore. Tight ends, Kellen Winslow Jr., Jeremy Shockey. That's just the offense. Ed Reed is playing safety.
I'm like,
holy crap. Yeah, tell us that you're paying your players without telling us that you're paying your players.
They just recruited their butts off that year, Mark.
Great.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.